WBOI Presents In Session is a series where we'll hear from teachers, educators, and experts on all sorts of topics, sharing their lessons in the WBOI studios. As part of our commitment to lifelong learning, In Session gives us an opportunity to partner with those who have something to teach us. During this episode, we'll hear from Nikki Meyer on the topic of nonviolence. Thank you for listening. Welcome to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer. In Session conversations give me two different opportunities when reaching out to experts throughout our community. Sometimes I've never met the teacher when I reach out to them about coming on In Session. Their visit to WBOI to record is the first time we meet in person. And other times, we've met before, and I know that the In Session conversation is in some ways a continuation of a discussion that we've already had on our air. Recalling our first conversation in the WBOI studio back in October of 2017, I'm happy to welcome back Nikki Meyer, advocate and facilitator at the Fort Wayne Center for Nonviolence. Thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me back again.
So this conversation will be the first of three, looking at how we address issues of abuse and violence. Our next two conversations are more global in scale with looks at the Catholic Church and peace studies and peace building between nations, respectfully. You and I are going to go more local, tackling problems that span cultures and countries, start in the community, the neighborhood, the family. And you've been a part of the Fort Wayne Center for Nonviolence since 2014. What is your role there, and how does it connect you to your community?
For the last five-ish years or so, I've been a victim advocate and facilitator. So primarily, I've worked with survivors of domestic violence, but I also facilitate groups for LGBTQ folks. And then as of January 2020, I am officially one of our, we don't really call it executive directors, but I'm on the general management body that it works collectively together to support the functioning of the Center for Nonviolence.
This is WBOI Presents In Session. Our guest instructor is Nikki Meyer. This episode is Nonviolence, Lesson 1. You may wind up averaging one podcast appearance per year, and I do want to take the opportunity with our conversation, as we're likely to highlight allies and people in the community who are doing well and doing the right thing. And of course, this now comes at a place of bias of us partnering with them, but I want to mention Stephanie Gottesman and the podcast Women Are Fort Wayne. You were one of their guests for their first season, and their second season will be available through WBOI. When you talked with Stephanie, the two of you spoke extensively about your beliefs and what brings you into the work that you do. And we're delving kind of into the specifics of what that looks like in action. But first, let's connect those two ideas. When you do work for a nonprofit, especially one where you have to then wear a lot of hats, how does the work that you do for the Center of Nonviolence and working in a place that has a mission that you personally believe in, how does that activate you and make it so that your work is truly a fulfillment of your beliefs?
Definitely, I work at the Center for Nonviolence because I believe in the mission. I was a women's studies undergraduate student at when it was still IPFW, now Purdue Fort Wayne, and I remember learning about the Center for Nonviolence when I was in that program. And I always felt really passionate about what they were doing because I would see them doing feminist programming and like feminist mission of eradicating gender biases and gender discrimination and creating equity among genders and just among all people, really, like that seeing the Center for Nonviolence trying to fulfill that mission, that it drew me to work for them. And when I saw that they had openings, of course, I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to try at least. And I just feel so lucky to work there because I've been given the opportunity to be creative. And the Center for Nonviolence has always done LGBTQ plus programming, but I've been given the opportunity to kind of take that and create something else with it in collaboration with other people at the organization. We have more LGBTQ plus programming now because I've been supported to do the things that I love and that I feel passionate about. And so trying to create a space where people can speak about their experiences, be heard, be believed, and then create a platform for thinking critically about why that is the case, whatever their experiences are, why that's true, and why there are so many other people who too have experienced that, like as a survivor of both sexual assault and intimate partner violence. When you're in those situations, you oftentimes don't realize that so many other people are also in those situations. And it's scary to speak about it because this is a person that you care about, a person that you trusted, and they are betraying betraying that trust, but you also usually oftentimes don't want to see harm brought to them either, because you do care about them. And so being able to create spaces where people can come together with others who have experienced similar types of violations to them, forms of oppression, abuse, whatever the case may be, I think is just, it's a crucial step towards change, whatever that is, whether it's personal change, cultural change, change within an institution. It just has to happen. So like when organizations like the Center for Nonviolence create spaces for staff to talk about issues around race and then allow specifically white staff to explore what biases they have about people of color or Black people or, you know, people who have disabilities or whatever the case may be, I think it's important to be able to have that space to be able to acknowledge this isn't necessarily my fault that I believe these things because it's been wired into me because of the culture that we live in. When I recognize that this is my belief or that this is my automatic first response because it's been wired into me, I now have the responsibility to change that and to confront that consistently. And so working at an organization like the Center for Nonviolence that has so many different people from different cultures, from different backgrounds, experiences, beliefs, it yet still tied to one core mission of ending violence and ending oppression when, where possible. It just is my mission and my belief. It's just from my experiences as a child being in a community where, you know, we moved to Auburn, Indiana when I was little, and there was a KKK presence there. And I guess I just didn't even, I was too young to realize, like, I thought stuff like that was of the past because I was in finished fourth grade and moved there. So like, I thought, you know, slavery had ended, the Holocaust was a terrible thing, and now we've arrived. I just didn't understand. And then when I come and move to Auburn and see that it's incredibly white community, friends of mine who were kids of color were treated differently, including by people in positions of power within the school even, who are no longer there, to be fair. I just couldn't believe it. And it really shaped my understanding of what my role as a human being living in this world is, which is not only to fight for myself, but to fight that other people who are struggling where I may have privilege and people are going to hear me and listen to me differently than they will other people because of their biases. And so being able to work at the center where, thankfully, my personal mission and their mission is very similar. I'm just lucky. I don't think most people get that opportunity. And so because we are a feminist collective, it's not like one set way that we have to do what we do. We can talk to each other and figure out the best way to meet the needs in the community, whatever that looks like. And so I could take, as a person who I see myself as a creative person, I'm able to use my creativity is valued there and used alongside other people and their experiences and creativity to create something that actually meets the needs of either communities that I'm a part of or communities that I'm not, that I have a privilege of not having to deal with that issue. But I make it sort of my personal mission to do my best to take the leadership of people that are affected by whatever that issue is, whether it's immigration issues or race, disability or whatever, and support what they're saying and take it to a level that maybe they wouldn't be able to because of those things in place that prevent them from moving forward or prevent them from being heard.
The structure of the Fort Wayne Center for Nonviolence is quite different from other organizations in the sense that you have what you called it a flattened hierarchy, and you have that in place and it tries to give everyone a voice or say in a matter. How do you think that helps problem solving in the organization, and how does that benefit the community that you're helping?
On the surface, a lot of folks would say that it slows down problem solving, and to some degree that is true because there are more voices represented within an issue. So how we operate in essence is as a collective. So regardless of what body you are sitting on, whether it's one of our primary program collectives or within our executive directorship, each person that is on that body has an equal say in what happens, and they have a vote. So like we have a system of voting that allows any one person to say, you know what, I don't support this. We're not moving forward with this idea. This is how I think we should change it to honor our mission and honor the community. So each person has a right to voice their concerns and their issues, and each person has a right to sort of halt the progress of whatever we're doing. However, if you're doing that, the expectation as a staff person committed to our organization and to the community is that you would offer an alternative so that you could get brought up to a place place where you do think it is in support of our mission and serving our community. Because our organization serves so many individuals within the community, like specifically, like we have programming in three different languages. So Spanish, Burmese, and also Mon, I should say. So there's two dialects that are spoken from Burma, and then English. So that's really four languages. We always have folks from those communities as the individuals who are serving those populations. Same thing with LGBTQ communities. So if we're serving LGBTQ folks, we have LGBTQ individuals in those roles. And then we also have other advisory groups throughout the center that represent marginalized communities. One of the others that I haven't mentioned yet is our Black Lives Matter advisory group. So each of those people have a say on our executive collective management of the organization. They all have voices in all of those places. So there are sometimes be a lot of voices at the table, but they're voices from oppressed groups or from groups that are typically not represented in equal ways within society. And so, yes, it can slow down the process, but it also creates more of an equal representation and influence. It's not just like we're there symbolically, it's they're there with contribution and can prevent something from moving forward. So yeah, we take a lot of time to talk about things, but it's coming from so many different cultural perspectives and people are representing ideas and issues that don't normally get talked about, I think, in a lot of workplaces, that we end up creating something that is usually so much more beautiful and representative of all the concerns that affect whatever issue we're looking at, rather than just one person's perspective, like a lot of executive directors would do. They just make a decision. So I think it's just more inclusive and can tackle more severe issues within our community and the populations that we are serving.
When we look at that idea of including as many different perspectives as possible, I think back to when we hosted Ron Elving now a couple years back for our NPR speaker series, and he talked about how even in the media landscape, at least with NPR, they try to create a 360-degree view of an issue with as many different perspectives included as possible. At least that's what I think of when you try to include as many different voices mm-hmm. and you want to hear from as many different people. If you have a platform or an organization, a nonprofit that is trying to amplify a voice in your community that otherwise your community might not hear from and might not have an understanding of the issues and the challenges that folks experience, different struggles that come from different minority groups or immigrant populations, it is a wonderful way to illuminate what those issues are and to make sure that everybody's represented when you're making decisions.
Right. Well, because I think what often happens is like when you are coming from a place of privilege or whatever the issue is doesn't concern you, it's not your fault necessarily that the issue doesn't concern you, but you just have a blind spot there because it's not something you've ever had to worry about. But when you have people from different communities at the table, they bring up issues that you would have never thought about because that's not an issue that is your issue. But then sometimes you have an issue that other people have a blind spot in. And so if our goal is to serve the Fort Wayne community and create nonviolence within the Fort Wayne community and end different kinds of violence, whether that's domestic violence or it's oppression of a specific group of people, we need to have all of those people at the table. And yeah, we can't have everyone at the table making decisions because nothing would ever happen. But you have to have voices from those communities to speak to what the issues actually are. So it just makes sense. But at the same time, it takes time. So not everybody either feels like they can or maybe they cannot spend that kind of time. It's not like they can't prioritize it or they don't prioritize it. And so I just feel very thankful and lucky to work at an organization where that is what we do. That is, it's in our mission. So I think we do come up sometimes with solutions that other people just wouldn't be able to because they are not structured the same way that we are.
You just mentioned privilege, and I do want to hit on that before we start getting into some of the nuts and the bolts and the problem solving and what you do as one of, I guess you could say, the boots on the ground in the community actively trying to serve the populations that you do. And it relates to one of the best pieces of advice I ever heard when it comes to privilege and those who are, as you kind of put it, there's insulation there, whether it's of their own doing or not. Mm-hmm. And for those who have some sort of privilege, who don't experience discrimination for their race or gender identity, they should simply acknowledge the privilege, own it, and use it as a currency to help other people. What are some of the ways that you see our community already doing that in certain ways, and how can we do better?
I see different organizations taking up issues that they see within the community that don't necessarily affect them. Like, I've seen different churches really speak up for LGBTQ folks, and I think that that can be really powerful because there's a sensitive sore spot there sometimes within different religious communities around LGBTQ plus identities for different reasons. And I've seen mean? Like the UU Church, I can't quote how long ago it was, but I want to say it's been at least 5 years that they have had all gender bathrooms long before the Center for Nonviolence ever had, like, you know, labels for all gender bathrooms. And we do LGBTQ programming specifically, you know? And so, like, I think, and I don't know the UU's church is tied to the LGBTQ plus community specifically, but I feel like those are specific acts that to some people could seem small or even silly if they don't understand that people within that church have said, like, this is important to us and we're going to make sure that people feel comfortable. So I think sometimes using your privilege is just, I am in a decision-making position within an organization, whether it's a church or a school or a nonprofit or a business or whatever, and you're saying, you know what, this is a safe place for people of X community or of all types. Like, that's symbolic. It's not necessarily putting your body on the line, like some part of allyship is to me, what part of using your privilege is, but it is something and it's not nothing, I guess. So when I think about privilege, I feel like a lot of times when I have these conversations, especially when they come up around race, people get defensive because I hear people that have grown up, oftentimes it's usually white people who have grown up in poverty, say things like, how can you say that I have privilege? Because they've gone without so much in their life. This is not my original idea, but I saw something online that said something along the lines of, nobody is saying that you haven't had struggles in your life, but your race is not one of those areas, or the color of your skin is not something that has caused you to struggle as a white person. So I think that thinking about it that way, it's not that if you have privilege, it's not that in every situation you have privilege, it's just in certain areas you might have privilege. I think that's really important to keep in mind because there are certainly areas where I would say I have a lot of privilege. I have a college degree. I'm working on a master's degree. I have a really good job. You know, I'm in a position where people sometimes listen to me. I am white. There's a lot of reasons why I have privilege, but I also am a woman, and I also am a queer person, and maybe even sometimes an invisible queer person, which, you know, can cause its own set of issues for me that I think can be lost. I think people focus on the areas in which they are oppressed and forget that in certain areas they do wield a lot of privilege. And I think the important thing to remember is with privilege comes opportunity to elevate the voices of people who are marginalized. And so you are in a unique position to create change that you want to see in the world for people that don't have that because of the structure of our society, the way that things have been organized, whether intentionally or unintentionally in certain areas, have silenced or overlooked certain people. And so I think that there are areas that Fort Wayne and people in Fort Wayne do really well at elevating the voices of marginalized people or people who have been oppressed. And there are some areas where we don't do so well. I would like to see schools really... So there's an organization called GLSEN. I think it's beautiful that we have GLSEN here in Fort Wayne now. And that is one area where we excel because GLSEN is an organization that used to have an acronym and no longer does. But in essence, it's an LGBTQ plus allied organization that looks to create safer schools for LGBTQ plus kids. Interestingly enough, Fort Wayne, Indiana has the very first GLSEN chapter in the entire state. You might think that like Indianapolis that has Indiana Youth Group would have one or, you know, Bloomington or other places like that. But Indiana does not have a chapter until I believe we were chartered in 2019. I was one of our founding board members and I'm no longer part of the organization, but fully support what they're doing. And they're going into the schools and really helping create student organizations, which are called GSAs, Gender and Sexuality Alliances, for youth where there are allies that are youth that are not LGBTQ plus working with youth who are LGBTQ plus. And so in and of itself, like that is a really beautiful way where you see allies working with and taking leadership from queer kids or queer people and working together to improve things. I think with GLSEN's leadership, I hope for Fort Wayne that Fort Wayne Community Schools and other schools in the surrounding area take heed and work with GLSEN in order to create some changes in policy to make schools safer for trans kids, specifically around bathroom issues or just names, like the way that they refer to students, pronouns that they use, things like that, that the administration can take a leadership role and be allies to young kids to make the environment safer for them so that they do have the opportunity to learn. Because we know studies show over and over again, like the ACEs study that people, it's a hot topic right now. now. When kids have adverse childhood experiences, they don't have the opportunity to learn in the same way that other students do, because there are things that are happening in their brain that prevent them from doing that. So if we can create safe environments and schools for youth as allies, or maybe some of the faculty are LGBTQ plus themselves, but they can be allies to those youth and create those relationships and create a safe environment in the school that doesn't tolerate bullying, that has just slight changes of policies that can really support kids' education.
I was not expecting to do anywhere near as much name dropping in our conversation when we first started, but I do want to highlight our friends at the Trapdoor. I've recorded their Pride Showcase the last couple of years for WBOI Presents, and I get to see you there each year because the proceeds from that event go towards the Center for Nonviolence. And it's fair to say, when you are serving a population that is facing challenges and difficulties and discrimination, in some ways your goal as an organization is to work for a world, or at least a community, where you no longer need to exist. You're still active and you're still doing quite a lot. So we've already highlighted a little bit, you have a strong network around you. What are some areas where we see needs are being addressed well? And what are some of the gaps that the center still very much needs to fill?
Interestingly enough, we found partnerships that are maybe not ones that we would initially think would happen, like Trapdoor, right? Like, we're not working closely with Trapdoor, but because they've seen the work that we do, they're like, okay, we want to elevate your organization and provide some funds for you. And I think that's really awesome. That, I mean, it's another way that people are using their privilege to support something that may or may not affect them, but where they can, where they have influence, they have financial influence, and they're elevating voices of stories of people who are LGBTQ or who are allies to raise awareness. And then the benefits us who are doing LGBTQ programming. So non-traditional partnerships like the Trapdoor, maybe, or we've also worked closely with, refer people to like Fort Wayne Pride, where, you know, we have, Pride is one place where I think Fort Wayne also excels, that we've had an organization that has lasted for, I don't know how long they've been an organization officially, but they've been doing prides for decades now, almost 2 decades, I think. I think this last one was like over the 20th or something. So it's, I mean, we're up in double digits here now of how many times we've had pride celebrations. They're also doing other things like providing places to connect. They do like monthly events where they do like skate nights and different things like that. And then when they have people reach out to them needing support, they refer people to us and to other places that are LGBTQ affirming. And I also want to give a shout out, I guess, to people that are in the mental health field. I have a growing list of people who are either LGBTQ plus or who have demonstrated in various ways that they are allies to the LGBTQ plus community, where I feel confident referring young people and adults to them and know that they're not going to be shamed or misunderstood for who they are, where they can actually get the support that they need. So there are Ally Counseling and Consulting is one of those. They're newer counseling organization. And then Oak Tree has always been a really great place that's done good work. There are just several people that are really taking things to the next level around just providing support to people who have been traditionally oppressed or harmed. And then I also think, you know, organizations like PFLAG that have been around for so long. It's an organization that's for like parents, caregivers, friends, family of LGBTQ folks that can come and be in community with each other and just talk about their struggles. And so there are little pockets of awesome things happening in Fort Wayne, specifically for, you know, I'm speaking about LGBTQ plus people because that's primarily one of my roles at the center. So it's easier for me to talk about that. But then there are also other areas where, you know, we'd love to see more. Like, we talk to the kids that we work with every Wednesday, and we have a support group on Wednesdays at Wonder Camer. And Wonder Camer is another amazing place that hosts events that is run by someone who's part of the LGBTQ plus community, that is a safe place for LGBTQ plus people of all ages, or just people of all walks of life, really. It feels like they host events about race and discrimination, and there have been events on the criminal justice system there recently. And it's just a place for people to be seen and heard and feel safe. Also, though, there are the issue of when I talk to LGBTQ plus youth that I work with on Wednesdays, the group that we have over at Wonder Camer, kids will say things like they just don't feel like there are safe places to go. And I hear a lot of adults who are LGBTQ plus say that as well, where they want to be in community with other LGBTQ plus people, but there really just aren't places where they could think of to hang out that isn't the bar. Because that's great that the bar exists, but some people are intentionally sober. Some people, you know, just just don't want to be around alcohol because it's a trigger or whatever, whatever the case may be. It would be nice to have other spaces. It would be nice to have a shelter for LGBTQ plus kids and adults that they could go to. Because right now it can be hard to place people in shelters when they're transgender or non-binary, because they can be asked to pick, or, you know, to pick how they identify or where they should go. And sometimes it's not safe either place. So I think we do have a lot of room for growth in ways of serving people specifically who are LGBTQ plus. And that's not to say issues around immigration and around race. That could be a whole nother hour long episode for each one plus some. So, but we have many places where we can improve, but thankfully there are also a lot of organizations who are, or just individuals within the community that are doing a lot of great work trying to solve some of the issues that we are dealing with around oppressed people.
Nikki Meyer, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you for listening to WBOI Presents In Session. You can find more episodes of WBOI Presents In Session at WBOI.org. And while you're there, you can find the very latest from the WBOI news team and stay up to date on content we produce year-round. Our theme music is by Noah Campodonico. Our web producer is Loyal Vandenberg. Our production assistants are Monica Blankenship, Steve Mullaney, and Sydney Wagner. Thank you for listening. From WBOI, Fort Wayne.